We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, episode 175. A Missile Opinion is brought to you by the most influential voices in the FC Barcelona community. I'm Dan Hilton, he's Francesc Tomàs, and Francesc, episode 175, it feels like a milestone of a number, but truly feels like a milestone because it is the very first show starting, and while he did obviously get signed, our last show about Quique Setién, this is the first one for the Quique Setién era, where we're going to be talking about Quique Setién football, and it really does feel good and hopeful and all those warm and fuzzy feelings, doesn't it, Francesc?
Hola, culés. Yes, it really does. After nearly 3 years of Valverde-ism, boring-ism, and whatever isms you want to put in there, it is a breath of fresh air to be talking about something different, something exciting, and something that aligns with our thoughts and feelings as to what our club should be.
Well, I think we're going to have to get right into La Ronda. We have so many good questions. We want to just keep this train moving. And we are talking, it's going to be uncharacteristically a little more of a match review about Barca-Granada because that's really the only sample size we have of the Quique Setién era. We have 90 minutes to talk about. And we're going to start with a simple one from Ellie. And he just asked thoughts about the game. And this is a game that I watched yesterday and then you watched today. And so, Francesc, having just finished it, what sticks out in your mind?
Well, it's fresher, isn't it? It's better. It is an improvement in terms of feeling, in terms of understanding, in terms of what the players were doing. I mean, someone like Busquets, for example, he looked like 27 years younger, if that's even possible. Obviously, not the way that he looks himself, but the way in which he was behaving around the pitch. He was pressing, he was running, he was even overlapping. And he was playing one-touch football, and I think that is the clear representation of what the team was. I think that Barca, again, after many years, I mean, arguably Valverde didn't bother too much with this, and the players did naturally, but after many years, they wanted to be protagonists of the game throughout. And, you know, let's take this with a pinch of salt as well. We're playing Granada, that have been better this season than Granada have traditionally been, but then again, you're not playing against Mourinho's Inter Milan or Liverpool under Klopp or anything like that. Regardless, Barca wanted to dominate. They were more fluid from building from the back. I thought that it was surprising that Lenglet didn't start the game and Umtiti was there instead. Having said that, the next game is against Valencia, if I'm not wrong, and Lenglet had 4 yellow cards. So maybe that was something that influenced his decision. Regardless of whether Umtiti or Lenglet played from the back, I think that Barca had a clear mission, which was taking care of the ball. And the speedness, the rawness, the dynamism throughout the whole place was tremendous. It was a vast improvement. I think that it was clear that Setién wanted to implement what his belief is, which is speedy football, 1-2 touches throughout, unless it was essential or unless you were sort of in the opponent's area. And it was great. It was fluid. I think that Barca understood when to push forward and when not to, as I would say the last 10, 15 minutes. And obviously, Riqui Puig came in and the game changed for the better, obviously. But I'm sure we're going to have some questions about that later. But Barca understood what the game was for and the whole purpose was to win it. But obviously, after 75, 80 minutes of showing what Barca can do, I thought it was a great presentation card, as Etienne handed to the Camp Nou fans and obviously millions of us around the world.
Yeah, the two words that you said that stuck out to me in particular there that I agree with was one touch, which is, I'm using a hyphen, so one word, and positioning. And Sergio Busquets and Lionel Messi were at the epicenter of that. And sure, a new manager might give you a little bit of an energy boost, and changing the formation might be immediately paying dividends against a team that were willing to give as much possession as they did. We'll have a question about that coming up. But for Sergio Busquets, here's the stats from the game. 179 touches, 157 total passes, 145 completed passes. Granada only had 130 completed passes, so keep that in mind that Sergio Busquets alone had 15 more completed passes than the entire opposition. 92.4 passing accuracy and 14 recoveries. And the recoveries, too, also sticks out to me because his positioning offensively and defensively yesterday, that being Busquets, was almost perfect. All the advanced metrics say he was the man of the match, but I think that number, it was an 8.0, an 8.1 out of 10, but that should have been even higher yesterday. I thought Busquets had an incredible match, and one of the main reasons for that under Quique Setien is that Busquets doesn't have to drop in between the center backs, and he was starting to build up from farther up the field because Quique Setien did bring and institute that high line. I think through the first 10, 15 minutes, I was thinking, you know, it doesn't really look that different. And then the shapes really did start to form on the field. And you go, oh, Sergio Roberto is tucked in as that right center back in a back three. And Jordi Alba's not going to really be coming back often. Fati's tucked in, play defense on that right side. And you have basically the two up top in Griezmann and Messi just combining and moving around and shifting around, where Griezmann sometimes would go out to the left wing when Alba stayed back. But largely, the positioning of Busquets, I think, was epicenter to everything, where he, because he didn't drop so deep and was starting to combine and starting the one-touch football farther up the field, I think it paid dividends to keeping possession the entire time. And you see just how important and incremental that position now is going to be. And whether it is Busquets or whether or not Frankie de Jong also plays in that position, if there might be rotation, I think de Jong is going to absurdly excel at that position as well. But I think he's going to excel next to Busquets, where if you replace Rakitic's first half with Frankie de Jong, I mean, the possibilities there are completely endless. And the other point, too, is for Messi, I've been very critical under Valverde this season that Messi drops too far deep into the midfield to receive the ball. Only one or two occasions did Messi get lower on the field, if you will, behind Fati or Vidal or Rakitic. Very few times did he really drop deep to get the ball to create and combine. Messi was largely just waiting for the ball to come to him. And then once they were in the attacking third, then yes, obviously he was orchestrating coming back, being the facilitator there. But by and large, Messi was waiting for those wall passes, waiting for the 1-2s. And when they finally did come, Messi makes the right decisions and keeps the ball flowing, keeps the ball moving. I thought Griezmann did a great job of that as well. So for me, every player that we thought was going to excel under Quique Setien wound up excelling under Quique Setien. And quickly on to the point of Samuel Umtiti, Cole asks, is it Umtiti's job to lose? And I think, Frances, you had a great point about Lenglet's yellow cards and the accumulation of those, and potentially that's why Umtiti was on the field. But I also think that, and Kevin Williams has been a big advocate of this for a long time, so credit to him. Hopefully we're going to have him on the show in the next few weeks as well to talk more about not only Umtiti, but Quique Setien. But Umtiti is willing to take risks. And there was one or two passes, one in particular, where he missed the ball and they had to scramble into recovery. But because Roberto and Piqué have an understanding that Umtiti is going to take that risk, they're prepared for the counterattack that could be coming the other way. And I thought they were able to snuff that out pretty well. And yes, it is against Granada and not world-class attackers, though Darwin Machis, he had his opportunities because Darwin Machis is pretty good. I'd say he's a pretty quality La Liga player. And all that said, Umtiti's ability to take risks, that's what I think is going to get him playing time at all. It could be still be Lenglet as the first choice, but I don't think he has the passing accuracy and the ability to convert on long passes that Umtiti does. So I think if Umtiti does play well, he could be the guy. But that doesn't say that Lenglet in a back three can't be the middle guy rotating with Piqué. I don't think it has to be an and or. It might just be all three in quick rotation.
Exactly. And one of the key points you sort of mentioned there in passing as well is the fact that Roberto has been a defensive midfielder coming through La Masia. So he understands the Busquets position. Obviously, he's also an interior, and because he's an interior and basically understands the Barca system inside out in any position, he's ended up playing a right back. But the thing is, he understands what a center back at Barca needs to do. And if the play is going towards the left, which is where Umtiti was sort of mainly positioned, or maybe even out of position when he's recovering, then he can sort of cover that Piquet positioning, so he rotates towards the left, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think it does make a lot of sense. So let's talk about possession as well, which is really what we're getting down to when you say Barca's system and Sergio Roberto's understanding of it. Rick asks, 80% possession. The exact number was 82.6 or 83% possession. Wow, our possession play must be back then. Now that we play a different style than Valverde's, how do you think our opponents will change their tactics? Will we be seeing more Mourinho Inter-style defensive approaches? And that's a tough one from Rick as well, because possession is paramount to what Barca does. But as we saw, I'm interested to see, and this is going to be the question on Kike Setien, when the goals aren't getting put in the back of the net, and I don't want to touch... It's hard to answer this without mentioning a target forward and mentioning a lack of Luis Suarez. We're going to try to put that on the back burner, Frances. So is there a way to answer this question without mentioning a number nine?
No. Not really, because obviously it is football and all the pieces interlinked together. So the main point here is that Setien is a Cruyffist, even though he never really played for Barca or played for Cruyff himself. I think he has said many times that he discovered football once the dream team showed him a thing or two on the field, and ever since he's been studying, and that reflects in that 82% that you just mentioned. Setien's way of defending is having possession of the ball, and that is something that during the Guardiola years in particular, that was obvious, something that Xavi's mentioned many times. And to be honest, I'm just glad to see that Barca has got back to what it needs to be, which is an attacking, purposeful team that have possession of the ball most of the time and know what to do with it. Obviously, they know what to do with it. We're going to be touching on soon in terms of what's happening up front. But as a starting point, after 3 days in charge, this is very positive from Setien already.
Yeah, I think one of the things that, as Armin asked, how far will Setien's obsession with Cruyffism go? And Vishud also asked about what can Kike Setien do to improve on that regard. I would say that we didn't see much of those long balls over the top yesterday, particularly with Antoine Griezmann to run onto. We saw a few out wide to Ansu Fati, and I think Fati's first touch let him down a few times, and I think we're going to see not only improvement from Ansu Fati in those individual matchups when he finds that space on the right wing, and whether or not that's Carlos Perez and Ousmane Dembele, I love that trio being in for one another, and you really do find, I think Setien can say, whoever has the best week in training, they're going to get the start in any particular match. Again, Ousmane Dembele is going to be back in a few weeks. We'll see how he integrates into that position, but at least offensively, again, Dembele is going to have some defensive work to do that I think Fati does maybe better at this point, even in his young career. But all that said, Antoine Griezmann, the attacks to him over the top weren't really conspiring, and whether it was Rakitic or Vidal, because I think under the Valverde system, Lenglet and even Piqué were tasked with almost breaking that midfield line and vertically sending a long pass ahead to start a counterattack. But as we saw under not even Guardiola, but Tito Villanova and even Luis Enrique, that task fell to a Xavi or Iniesta, and we've seen Busquets has that ball as well. And I think that is something that will improve and get better as well. Counterattacks and forcing a team like a Granada or even a better team who's willing to be defensively compact and play that high block to get them pushed even farther forward and almost draw them out, and then to allow longer balls, because there is quality in Barcelona's team to be able to play those balls. And it's interesting to me that even Rakitic, who had that ball, it seemed like under Luis Enrique, when he first showed up, that's why he was one of his best seasons. He had that ball that allowed verticality in the team to break into counterattacks, and he combined really well on a number of occasions, not only with Messi, but with Alba and with Pedro in his final season. And I don't know where that's gone for Rakitic, but if he's able to conjure that back up. But as I said, you also have Artur, you also have Frankie de Jong, and again, it's hard not to... I want to say Ricky Puig. It's on the cusp of my lips, Frances, to be talking about Ricky Puig, but let's hold off for just a more second here. But as I said, I think balls up and over those compact defense, I think we're going to see more of that, and that's what his Real Betis, that being Setien's sides, did. He got teams out, cut out on the counterattack, and as long as the defense, as we mentioned, has an ability, that being Barca, as long as they're understanding where they need to be and they're understanding that they're going to be fired upon. If you thought Marc-Andre ter Stegen was a savior before, I know he's got those bad knees now, but he's going to have to come up pretty big against some pretty good teams. But I think there's been a trust with him on that. The other point I want to mention here, over 1,000 passes for Barca in this game. So this is the new style. And how far will he take that? That's a great question. I don't know what the epitome or the extreme of this is. You know, Frances, you and I both love the NBA. And I think of the three-point shots, right? How three-point shooting, back in my favorite player ever, Steve Nash, he says now maybe he should have taken more threes, and that then Mike D'Antoni and those Phoenix Suns 10 years ago, they were pushing how fast in 7 seconds or less and how many threes you could take in a game. And now if you take them and put them into today's NBA, they'd be one of the slowest teams out there because some of their teams continue to shoot more and more threes, and James Harden or Steph Curry, they keep breaking their own records year after year after year. And my question with these passing is, maybe with this overcorrection that world football has done to make it counterattacking and to make things be quick sniper, viper-like strikes, what if Kike Setién is just going to say, we've got some of the best passers in the world. We are going to now recorrect, and we're going to pass everybody to death. The last time Barca had over 1,000 passes, though, Tito Villanova was manager, 4-0 win over Levante, Messi, Iniesta, Cesc Fabregas, and there were some pretty good players on that team. At that time, also the famous day when all 11 of the Barca team had come from La Masia. So what a telling moment in Barca history there.
Yeah, and everything that you mentioned, obviously, is interlinked. I think that the key point here, and I don't want to add too much because you explained it well, is just to say that we finally have a manager that is going to teach and it's going to influence, and it's going to improve our players. I mean, when you said about Dembélé, well, Dembélé is going to come back in terms of his private life, in terms of his difficulties outside of his actual job, which is playing football. That may be put in the back burner. That may be corrected because he actually cares and he actually has got someone who can motivate him and can get the best out of him. And obviously, Dembélé is going to be the clearest example. I think Artur has a thing or two to learn as well. And I'm excited we've got someone of that caliber, that experience, and that philosophy to lead us forward.
Yeah, that's a good point. About off-the-field stuff, that there's been worries about Arthur and Dembélé. And you know how in the off-season we felt like Vidal and Rakitic weren't going to survive the summer, either just like Valverde, and yet here they are in the fall because Barca just didn't do business. I think there's also a point here that if guys aren't fitting in what Setién wants to do, they're not going to play. And we already see that they're not going to play if he doesn't like what they're doing. And that means that they're going to be gone a little quicker. And I think that's, again, it's a tough thing to do, especially when you have older guys on big wages. So Douglas actually asked a question related to that. It's just one match. But if you had to pick between the two, who will be more useful under Setién, Arturo Vidal or even Rakitic?
I'd say that Vidal will be more useful because he's more different. I think that especially in the absence of Suarez, then you need players who can do something different, who can be a little bit anarchic and can drop into those spaces. I mean, regardless of what system Barca plays, Messi is the key player because basically he is the system. You know, he goes wherever he wants, he feels the game, he influences in whichever way he decides he needs to. And Barca, obviously, based on the first Setién match, Busquets is going to be as important, but obviously in a different facet of the game. If Messi does trust you, which obviously is clear that he trusts Vidal, then you're probably going to have something to add. And when you don't have Suarez as a reference up front, and you've got Vidal being able to sort of fill up those empty pockets of space, then that is something very positive that Rakitic cannot really do, because they're different players, obviously, not taking anything off Rakitic. But it is clear in the Croatians' perspective that 2015 was a better year for him than 2019 or 2020, clearly. Because father time is unforgiving, and Ricky Puig coming through. You've got other players that obviously Alanya when he returns from loan, which I know is 6 months away at least. But it is clear that the future is moving in a different direction. But for the time being, this season we need to challenge for every trophy, which we are doing. And with this added oomph that the new managers bring in, let's see where it takes us. But I think Vidal will be more of our protagonist for sure.
Right, and we're thinking in the short term as well. Carlos Alenya is gone for the rest of this season. It's actually been a great sign. I watched the Real Betis against Real Sociedad match, and they certainly took it to them at home. And Carlos Alenya was really, really good in that game. And Emerson, who I've talked about on this show, I think if Nelson Semedo doesn't wind up fitting with what Kike Setién does, and Sergio Roberto, we think, isn't completely up to it at that position, Emerson is certainly one to circle to return to the club. And Kike Setién knows that player well as well. I think that both of those guys could potentially be starters. And that's, again, that's the argument here, Frances. That's the hurdle, right, that you always mention, that guys who should be coming into Barca now because of what is pushing through at La Masia should be guys who step in as starters. So that's how I think that I'm going to approach this, or at least try to every time we hear transfer rumors. That do I think Alenya and Emerson are going to be starters? I do. I think they could come in and they could take positions But yeah, and you got to have guys heading the other way. But I think in January, we're going to get to that in a second about any positions that need to be reinforced, particularly just one. But we're going to end this general segment before we talk about the target forward and Ricky Pooge. We have a question from Daniel. Is there a narrative amongst the general football community that wants us to fail? And I think, Daniel, this question comes from the idea that you're hearing a lot of cynics and a lot of negativity after this match and say, well, sure, Barca beat Granada to start the Quique Setién era. They had all this passing. They had all completed passes, I mean, and they had all this possession, but they only won 1-0. It came in the 75th minute, and it came after a red card for Granada. And I think there certainly was a lot of criticism about Barca and questions and fears that this is what Barca is going to be. It's going to be a team that's going to possess, and it's going to look pretty. Sure, Barca fans might enjoy it, but they're not going to wind up getting results. But I think, Daniel, the failure there comes from the fact that I think that, as we talked about with Valverde getting sacked, it is a puzzling thing for so many other teams around the world to understand how a manager could possibly be fired or sacked after being first in the league, first in his Champions League group, still alive in every competition, having Lionel Messi, and again, leading Real Madrid in the Liga table, most importantly. I think the rest of the world is puzzled at why Barca, on the top of the world, results-wise, how would have to sack their manager. And that's because of that misunderstanding. That is, I think, the narrative among general football fans. They think that there's a snobbiness and a snootiness to Barcelona, and it would take you about 4 minutes on Twitter to figure out that I think there are a lot of newer fans, in newer culés who subscribe to those kind of things, and there is almost a privilege to watching Barcelona. And the other point here that I want to make to Daniel is that I think it's really off-putting for a part of the general footballing community as well. When we talk about Setién, and this is going back to Cruyffism, football the way that we know, and I say this as all those, most of our people listening right now are fans of Barcelona and culés. When we say the Barca way, the right way, we're ascribing morality, a sense of morality to the way that football needs to play. And that is an extremely, not only privileged position to be in, because that means that we're obviously going to be getting results because our players are that talented, but to ascribe morality to it, it does demonize the way that other teams play football, particularly a counterattacking, punch-you-in-the-mouth team like Real Madrid. We're saying that they're almost morally lesser than because of the way that they play football. And that certainly rubs a lot of people the wrong way. So that would be why what you hear when you say people want Barca to fail, there is certainly a privilege involved in Barcelona. And unlike some of us who might be, again, I host a podcast and I have a lot of time to talk my way through it, but in 160 characters on Twitter, especially some of our other, we'll say, younger fans, they do not articulate this well. And that, unfortunately, is the thing that gets thousands of retweets, thousands of likes, or somehow find its way into other people's or other detractors' articles on websites. And they see a lot of the novice fans who don't really know how to articulate what they're seeing and what they enjoy about Barcelona.
Yeah, I don't think there's any denying that the Barca fan base, and us included, no question about that, we've been spoiled for many years because our team has played the right way, which is the Barca way, which is Cruyffism, which we explained in this show and in, you know, the previous 174 episodes as well. Mm-hmm. And that's not our fault. That's what it is. You know, that's the situation that we are, and we shouldn't be apologetic about it. We should be proud of our past. We should be proud of who we are, and we should be proud of how demanding we are. We want our team to play well. And in Barca terms, normally when Barca play well, we end up winning, because then we've got, we're not a poor club, obviously. We're one of the top two teams in La Liga. Therefore, we get a lot of money for transfers, which historically we've handled fairly well. Rivaldo, Romario, Ronaldo, etc. And in later years, Ronaldinho, etc. So we haven't done too badly there. And because of that, when we play well, traditionally, we win. Is it enough to win games for us? No, it's not. If you think back at the, and I know I've said it twice in this podcast, weirdly, when we lost to Mourinho in the Champions League against Inter Milan, obviously Samuel Eto'o was part of their team as well. I wasn't really upset. I was upset about the fact that we lost. I was upset about the fact that Mourinho was running around the Camp Nou being a clown. But we played the right way. We did everything we could to get there. And football is football. Sometimes you just don't win. But if you're going to die, you need to die standing up for what you believe in and going about it the right way. And this, I don't know what's going to happen in this season. I don't have a crystal ball. But I know we're going to have fun on the journey. And that's what we need to keep thinking and moving forward. With that, as to what the rest of the world thinks about me and us, I don't care. I honestly don't care. That's their problem.
Yeah, I agree with that. Again, you dig in, and again, it's just social media where you get attacked. And I have riveting conversations with all of these other fans I have. I have a good friend who's a Man United fan, and it was funny, we were speaking this week just about the cycle that Man United in, and I mentioned where I had a great fear in Valverde that the cycle of Barcelona greatness, obviously Messi, you know, could be ending and all of those things in the coming years. And all that said, I said I wake up in a cold sweat at night thinking that Barca could turn into AC Milan, a team that was on the top of the world, seen as a leader, transfers, all of these things, and then all of a sudden they wind up being a team that's fighting for Europa League spots and fighting for Champions League spots because they just had too many years of bad business, bad management, and a team that just didn't have a passion, right? And so,
but Dan, with that, can I jump in there?
Sure.
You just trigger something with that. Barca is not going to be in that position because what Cruyff did, and Cruyff and the people around him, and the people before him, and the people after, they created a culture. They created a winning culture. They created a culture of beautiful football. And it's not just Cruyff anymore. It's not one person with a flag, like maybe I'm not a Manchester United fan or expert, obviously, but maybe Ferguson didn't have that caliber of people following, you know, because you've got, I don't know, Guillermo Amor, Guardiola, you've got Xavi, Puyol, Iniesta, people that weren't even with him in terms of Setién, then Luis Enrique, and so many people that fell in love with football again were under Cruyff's direct orders or around him. I mean, I'm forgetting a lot of them, like obviously Jordi Cruyff, his son, but the Garcia brothers, Oscar and Jofra, and loads of managers that have been coaching in La Masia. They a lot of them moved to Australia. There's some of them coaching here in Qatar, actually. And it's not a person. We don't depend on a person. We depend on an idea, on a dream, on an idealistic way of being, and that's never going to die. We could be more or less successful. I mean, if you think about it, Ajax don't win every league. Ajax haven't been successful in Europe for many, many years, even though last year they had a fantastic run. But Ajax play football the right way, and their stamp, their philosophy is intact, whether they win or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right about that. And that's why I said it's a nightmare. It's not, I don't choose whether I wake up thinking about AC Milan or not. But I think you're right about that. And that was what the frustration, and that does, you know, I know we're ending the Valverde era, but that's what made that Valverde week in and week out so frustrating, that there was a feeling and a dread that this board was taking us away from all of those ideals and all of that. And, you know, was there going to be a lack of players coming up through? Was there going to be a lack of ideas from management and from the board? And were transfers going to stop being Barca type players? And all of those fears, you know, compound upon one another. And it's certainly not just one thing. But yes, certainly the move for Quique Setién, even as a desperate move that it was, even if he wasn't first choice, he certainly could be taking us back in that place. And one of the things that he did immediately, as we have two more topics to go on this show. We've been holding off and talking about Ricky Puig. That's a big one here. And he, unfortunately, it's not even that we're talking about the player himself, Ricky Puig. It's going to be a difficult thing to disconnect talking about the individual Ricky Puig and the 20 minutes he played against Granada and what we saw in that match from almost the very essence of La Masia that he currently represents, right? That's a thing that we've been waiting for Puig. He's been the player for now, almost 2 years now, since we've been doing this pod. We've known about Puig. We've known he's been that special Barca B midfielder, and we've been waiting for someone to give him an opportunity. The one thing I want to start by saying here before we answer this question, that this was the first time, this was not his first team debut, but this was the first time, whether it was Copa del Rey or the two La Liga matches last year, that he played with Lionel Messi and he played with the starters. And that is a very important distinction. That was my criticism last year of the minutes that Puig got, where we never really did get to see him. He made Denis Suarez look really, really good in the Copa del Rey, right? And if you can make Denis Suarez look like Messi, what can he make Messi look like? And we saw what happened yesterday when he gets even though he gave the ball away on a missed combination with Alba, he won the ball back. He got knocked off the ball a few times, sure. But again, a credit to Sergio Busquets, who was defensively prepared for him to lose the ball. How smart is Sergio Busquets, by the way, on that? That two of the three occasions when Ricky Puig really just was taken to the house and knocked off the ball, Busquets was close enough to him, within 3 yards of him, to immediately take the ball back and almost recover for that one failing that Puig has still in his game that we knew was going to be coming physically. But all that said, everything that he did Otherwise, Ricky Puig was an upgrade offensively to what Rakitic was doing. But again, Puig now, we wonder, when we look at every performance he has, I think Fati, we say he's 17, and I think there's forgiveness there, and there should be. But now Puig, is he ever going to go back to the B team? I say he shouldn't, or probably not. And is he always going to be a Barca first team player? Is he ever going to go out on loan? All those questions are becoming now. But if Puig, if this is the moment where he begins to break into that first team, I'm not saying as a starter, but breaking in, he does serve as this hope for La Masia. And that is a incredible pressure on him. But it also is, again, a narrative that tints the way that we view every performance that he has.
Yeah, the 2 points on that. First, everyone wants to hype him up. He hasn't really played that much. He played 20 minutes against a team that are not in the top of the table and they're not going to be winning Champions League anytime soon. So let's start with that because, you know, when he jumped into the pitch, and I understand, you know, as a fan, you get all hyped up. He got a louder cheer than Arthur got when he came on. And I thought it was a little bit excessive because really he's been waiting in the sidelines and was the Barca B doing his time, etc. But he hasn't done anything at first team level just yet. So this is a youngster, like Iniesta was when he started, like Xavi was when he started. And the more pressure we put on him, so basically the higher up we raise him, the further down he can fall and smash. So let's just start with that point. Then second, the guy is exceptional. He's a fantastic player with loads of skills, and he was an upgrade on all the professionals that get paid so much more money than him. And with that in mind, it is normal that people get excited. I think the association, the touch, the willingness, how hungry he was, the pace on the ball was something remarkable. But it's a very small sample size. It's the same with Fati, you know, and obviously Ansu has played much more than Ricky has at first team level. But these are youngsters. They are going to make mistakes. They may not control the ball first time. They may get dispossessed because, in a way, they are little, not in age, but actually in weight and build still. And they may miss clear shots on goal. Like Ansu could have scored 2 goals easily yesterday. He just didn't. But this is a risk you take. And to me, having someone like Setien leading that understands that this can happen and this will happen, it is great. Having the support of Messi, who was constantly giggling after Ansu was missing and he was associating with Puig, is what makes Barca what it is, because these players, they may be older now, they may have been in the spotlight for 10, 15 years, but they know what it's like to come from within. They know what it's like to have to earn the space. And I think it's a very healthy, happening environment to move forward. And the thing is, I don't want to forget Carles Pérez either. I think Pérez was very good coming on as well. And I think that, as you mentioned earlier in the pod today, having him with Dembélé in the mix for that third position up front is very healthy moving forward. And in terms of Setién, I mean, if his time at Logroñés, Lugo, Racing, and obviously Betis is anything to go by, he will die by his word. I mean, he got sacked from Betis because he continued stubbornly to play the right way in his mind, in his book, which is why he got hired in the first place. So I'm excited about the future, and I've got no clue what it's going to look like.
Yeah, so three quick questions, basically almost yes or no questions about Ricky Puig. George asks, can Ricky secure more minutes in the first team on a more regular basis? And obviously, that's an easy yes, because he's going to be featuring in the first team as opposed to under Valverde when he never featured. So do we need to answer more about that?
Nope. He will play more.
Yeah, certainly. He'll get his minutes. Don't expect him to be a starter, but I expect him to be on the bench now regularly going forward. Eric asked, with De Jong back next week, Arthur returning to health, and Puig in the squad this week, what midfield do you see as being the most successful going forward? Frances, for me, it's the one we've been talking about. I think the most successful Kike Setién midfield is going to be Arthur, Frankie De Jong, and Busquets. My only caveat here is if there is not enough scoring on the field, and we're going to end the show by talking about the whole goals and target forward, all that. But Vidal is the leading goal scorer for the midfielder and really the only midfield threat to score regularly. So that would be the one caveat here, that if there is a necessity for goals to come from the midfield occasionally, then Vidal might supplement Arthur, especially if Arthur, who, yes, he made a brief cameo, but I didn't think he looked completely healthy yet. The injury he had with the groin is something that takes a long time to come back from and be right from. So if Arthur, it's sad to say, but if this winds up being almost a lost year for him health-wise and physically, I could expect Arthur Vidal to wind up being part of our best midfield trio. But if everybody's healthy and everybody's clicking, yes, I think it's De Jong, Busquets, and Arthur this season.
Yeah, unless he plays as a false nine and Messi goes wherever he wants and Griezmann comes out of the middle, which is also a possibility because if you think about it, Barca played with probably two false nines yesterday and you can really discard that. And Setien is always inventive, so who knows what's going to happen.
Last question on Puz, then we're going to talk about the forwards, man. We've been teasing it and flirting with it, Frances. All right, one more. We're going to get to it. Vilmos asks, Puz didn't seem like he had enough weight on his body. How can he cope with strong midfielders and defenders in the long term? Is his body still evolving? I think the answer actually to that one tactically is that in the lower division, in the third division, he did get pushed off the ball, but he had a way of understanding those players' movements, and he wound up picking up a ton of fouls. So to a point where guys knew that if they pushed him off the ball and hit him the way that they did, they were going to pick up yellows or reds. And I think yesterday, the game is just at the Liga level as compared to the Segunda Division B. It's quicker, it's faster, and it's going to take him time to adapt to understand how to use his body and pick up those fouls then. Because that's what it is. Even if he gets pushed off the ball the way he did yesterday, I think that they're in the B division when things were, again, just a little bit slower. He found and learned a way to shield the ball enough where he's going to be fouled in the same way that Messi learned to do that too. Messi might be built, though, a little bit like an ice cube. He is so, so wide and is such a powerful center of gravity. He really is. That Puig, that's not Puig. I know it's a little different there, but I think early on, Iniesta is not a big player. He had to learn the same thing, where Iniesta would say, I know I'm smaller than you, but you can't push me off the ball. You're going to have to foul me to get it. And that's what he learned to do in the third division. So when you talk about the way his body is probably not evolving that much, he's 20, he might put on a little bit more weight, but you really doubt it. But what he could do is gain a little bit of strength in the lower half of his body to just get fouled instead of get knocked off the ball from the upper half. And to learn to do it at the speed of La Liga is going to take a little time. And that's certainly something for him to work on. So no, as you mentioned, Frances, he's not a finished product. He's not a perfect product, but I'm optimistic that that's going to be a skill set that not only did he learn at the third division, but he's going to be able to apply to the first division in some time.
Yeah, just to add that at third division level, and I've watched hundreds of games because that's where my brother has spent the vast majority of his career, mm-hmm. between Segunda B and Tercera División. There are a lot of players there that are past it, basically, the skilled players, because obviously they wouldn't be playing at that level if they weren't, but they are in the 30, 32, 33, 34, 35 years old, and basically they've done anything they wanted to do in football. When you play against Barca and you've got these really handsome million followers, Instagram people in front of you with weird modern hair, that doesn't make any sense, a bit of an aside there, you've got no worries on kicking them. And I think, to be honest, it's good for Ricky to be out of that, because he will be playing at first division level against professionals that understand and want to have a long career themselves, which a lot more spotlight put on them. Playing in the Tercera División is rough, and I'm happy Ricky's out of it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's finish this show by talking about the target forward position. As we mentioned, and we've been getting to, anybody who saw the match, particularly Kool-Aids, were watching that with a fine-tooth comb. So there's tactically not much that Frances and I are going to glean or shimmer on that game that you didn't already see, with Griezmann and Messi combining as, basically, as you mentioned, two false nines and a 3-5-2 when they had the ball, which they did for 83% of the time. So Yogiv asks, why is Griezmann not being used centrally even though Suarez is injured? I actually hit back about that question, that I think he was, that it felt like he was coming on the left wing at times when Messi was facilitating in the middle. But I thought their movement was actually really, really good. And it's almost picturesque when they were both knocked down right outside the penalty box and they helped each other up. You know, there's a lot of images and, you know, the photographers obviously were there on hand to capture that picture of them helping each other up. But their partnership is just starting. It's just beginning now. And I'm, again, optimistic that it's just going to get better and better when they start to understand the times when, now we know that Messi isn't a target forward four, but he does get into the box. And even where the combination they had on the corner kick, when Griezmann, it seems to work almost once a game, where Griezmann is the one to make that run to the near post, Messi finds his head as he's trying to flick on to either Piqué, Umtiti, or Lenglet at the back post. So I think it's going to work out, and it didn't. Yeah, he certainly was working centrally. And Griezmann was showing in this game, more than any other game, I think, under Valverde, that his first touch is superb. It is world class. And that's what we're being reminded of, that Griezmann might not be a out and out number nine, but I think he is getting, even if he's not finishing the goals centrally, buildup is happening through him in the center part of the field, as it should have been with Suarez. So I think that's a positive thing. But even Pancho asks for you, Frances, what will help Barca's end product with the Granada game? Was it just bad luck, or is it just a lack of a finisher now with Suarez? Because we knew the 10 goals before that, he was associated either with a goal or an assist with the 10 goals before the one that Messi scored on the boot of Arturo Vidal.
Yeah, well, if you don't have arguably the best striker in the world as part of your team, you are going to miss him. My understanding is he's got 14 goals in half a season, which is remarkable by anyone's standard, certainly by his as well. And obviously, he's been criticized left, right and center from the very second the preseason started for being out of shape, but his numbers are there for everyone to look at and in a way learn. I think that any team would miss Suarez, and Barca are not going to be any different in that respect. But then again, given where we are in the season, given that we've got a new manager and given that he's looking for new solutions, I really don't think having him out is going to be as detrimental as it would have been if Valverde was our coach today. I think that the playing time that Suarez obviously is not going to be enjoying will be distributed amongst up-and-coming talents with plenty of potential to make an impact. Obviously, as we've said before, Dembele will come back and he can add a different dimension to that. And to be honest, in terms of the central position, I mean, this is Barca. It's not West Ham with Andy Carroll trying to get a flying header and scoring from a corner. This is different. Barca is dynamic. It's all about movement. It's all about spacing. And this is very simple in football, and every coach that I've ever worked under and watched has done this. And it was very telling. On the 15th minute, you've got Fati, and at the time was Messi, and obviously Griezmann as well, swapping position and switching continuously. And when I saw that, I was like, yeah, I've been doing that for the last 30, 40 years, but Valverde didn't think about that probably even once. And it's just positions are spaces. And if you are always sort of stable on the same spot, then it's very easy to mark you. When you've got, and you said it, I think it was in the Facebook group, when you've got Granada chasing shadows rather than people, then that's when the magic happens. So not having a central reference is not a problem. The problem would be whether people are able to run into those spaces. And to be honest, the finishing has to improve because it wasn't up to scratch against Granada. But to be honest, three days since Setien started training with the team? I'll definitely take that.
Yeah, the last two questions from Christopher and Amon. What is Barca's best approach to replacing Suarez? And Amon's asked, with Suarez's injury, how do you think we resolve that issue? And the answer to me is that it's going to be resolved through Griezmann becoming more of a finisher and a goal scorer for Barca. And I think those opportunities are there because, as you mentioned, he's going to be in the space now. And I know it felt at times where when Barca were crossing and it didn't seem like there was anybody in the box, I think that continuity it's going to come, that they're going to figure out exactly where Griezmann needs to be. He's now, again, almost restarting his Barca career as a false nine, where he's now being tasked to be in different positions than he was under Valverde. So I think for all the players that Quique Setién's system will affect, I think Antoine Griezmann, and I think Sergio Roberto is the other one, but I think, or whoever that right center back is in a back three when they have possession, I think Antoine Griezmann is the guy with the most onus on change in his position. And so I think it is going to take a little bit of time, but as I said, the buildup is the most important part, and that was there. And then the finishing, he has the ability to finish, and I think he will. And all that said about replacing Suarez, there's no one on the transfer window for January that Barca is going to bring in that's going to score you, 10 goals for the rest of the season or 9 goals or whatever you were going to get out of Suarez. That's just not going to happen. He's one of the top goal scorers still in the world, as much as we get on him for all the things that he breaks down as far as combining, and he doesn't bring the pressure. And we clearly saw that what you're missing from him, as much as you're missing his goals, they're important to winning matches. But also remember, again, why we were criticizing him so much, that he wasn't really bringing that pressure. And having the 10 guys behind Messi bring the pressure allows him to choose when he wants to high press himself, which he did, I think, on more occasions. This team is going to run. And Suarez, I don't know how much he was going to fit under in this Quique Setién system anyway for long amounts of time. I think he might have found himself on the bench anyway. But how do we resolve the injury issue? Again, we're going to have to wait. But as far as the goals, they're coming from the guys you know. Messi's going to be scoring. Griezmann, you need to get something out of Fadi. You have to get something out of Perez. You have to get something out of Dembele. Occasionally, Arthur, we know he can shoot a long shot. Alba is going to get one or two. You're going to get one from Sergio Roberto. You're going to get a few from Piqué. It's going to have to be that era where, and I do think a lot of Pedro, he scored more goals than you think he did. And it's going to be like that, where you're going to look at the list and go, oh, maybe Carlos Perez, he scored 4 or 5 goals, and that winds up all those little goals by individual players get you over the line. Because, you know, I also want to push back too, where I think it's a dogmatic idea to go, oh, well, we just have to, you know, we got Puig, he came up, we got to get La Masia, it's going to be coming up. And to that, I just want to push back and not be a cynic and not be negative here, but Albert Ruiz, who is the player that everybody always mentions, he's going to be gone in the next maybe few days, maybe by the time this is out. It seems like he's going to Sporting CP in Portugal. It's going to be, looks to be about 1.5 years loan. They could be changing the terms. Again, they're still working on the contract now. But so Albert Ruiz, the guy that everyone's going to mention. And I think people are still going to be mentioning him when he's playing for a different club, because they know that, you know, he's the name that's coming up. The forward, there's an Albanian center forward, Ray Minaj, coming from Albacete to Barca B, but he's being signed to replace Albert Ruiz at Barca B. From what I've ever seen, he doesn't really have the quality. And then the other two, Alejandro Marquez and Kike Severio, who's a winger. Marquez in the middle, also a little bit younger as well. I think he's only still 19. They're going to probably be called up for the game against Ibiza. And I want to end on a positive note that Minaj, maybe they see something that they like with him, the Albanian forward, as I said, coming in. But in the case of Marquez and Severio, I don't know. Maybe they are that good. We go back and we think guys who were trusting La Masia, we didn't know what Pedro was. Pedro was the same thing, where he was a little bit older when he was brought up from Barca B, and he wasn't supposed to be a top-level talent that he became. Busquets was the same thing. Xavi and Iniesta were much more heralded in La Masia than Busquets was, and they kind of came out of nowhere. So you know what? With all that Alejandro Marquez has shown so far, maybe he is even better. Maybe when he is playing alongside first-team players, he gets called up, gets a few minutes off the bench, and gets some timely goals in the way that Bojan did all those years ago. I'm not saying that's going to be the same path, the same future, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe these talents that aren't supposed to be top-level talents wind up banging in the few goals that is necessary. So maybe La Masia is the answer. I just would tell people that I wouldn't bank on it. I wouldn't bank on January transfer window being the key. I wouldn't bank on La Masia being the key. But I would bank on the talent already in the squad to bang in a few more goals now that Suarez is out.
Yep. I would save the money, as I said before, save the money and invest it properly into some starter come next transfer season when the season's over into the summer.
So last question for you, Frances, comes from Dan Hilton, actually. He asked Frances, of all the players that you think are going to benefit from the Kike Setien era, what player do you think is going to shine the brightest?
Frankie de Jong, without a shadow of a doubt. He's going to grow into the player he needs to grow, and into the player that he should have become 6 months ago when he joined us. But he's been locked away into the Valverde's nonsensical, chaotic world that he's been freed from. So Frankie, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, and I also want to say we did have a bunch of maybe new listeners or returning listeners with the Kike Setien appointment last week. So thanks for joining back in with the Barcelona podcast. And to tease it for next week, well, we haven't seen Frankie de Jong under Kike Setien yet. So there's a game in Ibiza in the midweek. So we'll get to see a lot of La Masia players under Kike Setien, most likely, as they'll be called up for the Copa del Rey match. But you're going to have to come back next week to hear all about Frankie de Jong, how he did against Valencia in the very first match for De Jong under Kike Setien. So I just to tease it, you just have to keep coming back to the show. And the other thing, just a quick point on Ibiza in the midweek. Again, it's going to be a lot of younger players. But unfortunately, Frances, I don't know what the drinking age in Ibiza is. But what I will say is it seems to have a comparison to in the NBA of Miami or Toronto or some of these places where on the when teams fly in early, and spend a little bit of time in the nightlife. It seems to be a rough match the next day. But that said, by starting a bunch of kids, you know, the kids aren't really allowed to go out and they all have curfews. So I think that might actually be a positive thing instead of playing. We don't know how late Gerard Piqué is going to be staying out in Ibiza. So maybe starting a Ronald Araujo might be a little bit of a better sign actually against Ibiza.
Exactly. I mean, Ibiza doesn't have any age. Ibiza doesn't have any control. Ibiza is... it's what it is. I think the USA is what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, so it's the same thing with Ibiza. I was fortunate enough, actually, nothing that is relevant to Barca at all, but I went to Ibiza 10 consecutive years and it was fun. I'll just leave it there.
You know, I think for people that have gotten to garner our personalities, they know that Ibiza, to me, very much like Las Vegas in the U.S. or Atlantic City, seems like a nightmare situation. Not a beach guy. I'm not a night guy. But I think now that we're talking about Ibiza, I think, again, that'll wrap this show up. I think that's where we end it. So thanks so much for tuning in again. You can tap in your app and check out the show notes to subscribe. You can find us on social media, too, on Twitter, at the Barcelona Pod, at Hilton D13 for me, on Instagram, at the Barcelona Pod, the closed Facebook group where we get these questions. And actually, we did have a ton of new names and people who answered the questions. And that's why we had a huge induction of people this past week on tbpod.link/group. That's where we get these questions from, deeper dives, discussions, and a great community there. We're also on Patreon, where I set my own record. I had the longest match review that I've ever done on Patreon for the Granada match, and that is at tbpod.link/patreon. That's also how we continue to make these shows. That is still, of all the things I've been doing, of all the different ways that this show has continued, the Patreon has always been foremost the reason why this has all been possible. And I'm on YouTube as well. Things are really picking up there with the new studio here in the basement at the Barcelona Podcast. There, you know what it's called. Check us out there, and particularly hit that subscription button, hit that like button, leave a comment. That all helps out as well. And finally, the one thing you can do, if you like this show, iTunes, Apple, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you're listening, just leave a little rating there. That helps us out as well. So as we start a new era, the Quique Setién era begins as well. I want to start everything else on a positive note. 2020 is going to be our year. And by that, I mean all of Kool-Aid is going to be our year. So thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. And Forza Barça.
Forza.